Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday the 4th of March 2016. It's a little bit cold, a little bit snowy. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your presenter for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting live on 93.2 FM, also through our internet live stream at sheffieldlive.org, where you'll be able to find this show later as a podcast. And in today's show, we have interviews recorded on Monday at the launch of Grimm & Co. in Rotherham. An apothecary to the magical. What's that? Well, you have to listen on to find out. But I spoke with Deborah Bullivant, who's launched Grimm & Co. on Monday, along with author Joanne Harris, who's notable for writing Chocolat and many other novels, and of course the bard Ian McMillan, Jeremy Dyson of League of Gentlemen fame, and Ben Payne of the Ministry of Stories. But before we turn to our interviews, a quick roundup of what's going on in business and social enterprise. Employers could be deemed legally responsible for a far greater range of staff behaviour, according to legal experts, after the Supreme Court ruled that a supermarket firm was accountable for one of its employees attacking a member of the public. A panel of judges found that Morrison's was liable for the actions of Amjid Khan in punching and kicking a man on the forecourt of one of its petrol stations in Birmingham. The judgment has overturned the outcomes of a previous trial and of a subsequent Court of Appeal hearing, which had both dismissed the claim. The judgment said that these outcomes failed the close connection test. The Supreme Court ruled there was a connection between the attack and between Khan's job of serving customers. Martin Pratt, who's a partner in the employment law team at a legal firm, Gordon Dadds, has said that the decision has massively increased employers' potential liability for their employees' actions. Creative and digital businesses here in Sheffield are set to be given a multi-million pound boost to help in the development of their sector in the city. Sheffield City Council has been offered the funding by the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, and then to act as the accountable body for £3.5 million worth of capital funding, which is expected to help establish a new facility providing workspace, business incubation and other services for entrepreneurs and small and medium-sized businesses who rely on digital technologies. A Sheffield consortium led by entrepreneurs had developed a business case for the creation of a tech-based incubation facility within the city centre. And the creative and digital industries are, of course, a key growth sector for Sheffield and the wider city region. So the funding which is being made available to set up the digital business incubator is going to hopefully expand and boost these businesses in the future. It's expected to establish the incubator in Castle House, which is a former co-op building at Castlegate. Major retailer BHS has been forced into a CVA, a company voluntary arrangement. It's battling to get affordable rents at its stores across the country. 14 of its 164 stores are in the Yorkshire region, and the group needs its creditors to agree its plans to enter the CVA arrangement. They've threatened landlords of 40 stores, including 6 stores in Yorkshire, that they will close unless they agree to receive a reduction in the rent due in the next 10 months and can negotiate rent reductions. And a restructuring partner at KPMG, who's a proposed supervisor of the company voluntary arrangement, has said that if they can achieve rent reductions, the stores will remain open. BHS is also asking landlords of other stores across the UK to agree to rent cuts of up to 50%. Diana Buckley, who's the head of economic strategy at Creative Sheffield, has been included in the prestigious Top 50 Future list by the Northern Power Women. Northern Power Women last night hosted an event in Manchester to acknowledge the outstanding women working in both public and private sectors that are shaping the Northern economy. And Creative Sheffield, which is the economic development arm of Sheffield City Council, Diana works there and leads the economic strategy team. And she's been quoted as being the catalyst for change in a series of high-impact economic development programmes in Sheffield. Anne Wilson, who's the boss of New Mill Engineering Limited and has been on this guest in the past. Marie Cooper, the plant manager at Parker Hannifin. And Bridie Warner-Adsets, who's the chief operating officer at Naylor Industries, are going to be sharing the inspirational stories of their rise to the top at an event next Tuesday to celebrate International Women's Day. It's the Women in Business International Women's Day with Athena International Awards. It's next Tuesday at the Tankersley Manor Hotel, taking place from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. And they say that it's all about honouring and celebrating the contribution women make to our world. The event's going to be hosted by Joe Davison, who has over 30 years of experience reporting on people who've done remarkable things. And these driven and dynamic women are going to talk about breaking the mould, women in manufacturing, and what motivated them to get there, according to Jackie Freeborn, who's the chair of the Women in Business Group at Barnsley and Rotherham Chamber of Commerce. An event next Wednesday is called Be Inspired, local talk by successful entrepreneur Guy Jeremiah. It's part of the Make It in March series of events. He's going to talk about his startup story, going from the jaws of the dragon's den to success and beyond. He's going to also explore his ventures from business and into social enterprise and much, much more. The event's free. You can book by looking it up on Eventbrite. It's hosted at the library. Look up Be Inspired, Maker's Journey and Social Enterprise by Social Entrepreneur. And the FSB, the Federation of Small Businesses, is joining forces with Rotherham and Barnsley Chamber of Commerce to present a free evening networking event to help local businesses to share best practice on cybersecurity and the impact of cybercrime on small businesses. They say hackers are getting better and businesses are increasingly at risk. They say the problem is only expected to get worse and that the number of detected security incidents has climbed 38% in 2015 and has been growing at a double-digit rate over the last 5 years. So if you want to go along, find out more about how to tackle and how to prevent cybercrime in your business, then go along to this free event. It's Wednesday the 16th of March, 6 p.m. at the Town Hall in Rotherham. Free to attend, but booking essential. Again, you can find this one on Eventbrite. Just go on to eventbrite.co.uk and then look up Cyber, Crime and Business, What's the Future? 16th March, and you'll find it. Now, of course, I'd welcome your views on what's going on in business and social enterprise here in the city. You can get in touch with me and with this programme by email jamie@sheffieldlive.org. Text 07904 272 200. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter. Find me, Jamie Veitch, on Twitter as well. And whether you're starting, running a business or a social enterprise, or if you're self-employed, if you're an employer, we're always keen to hear from you. So let's turn now to our first interview. Earlier on this week, on Monday, I went along to the extremely exciting launch of Grimm & Co., an apothecary to the magical. Well, what's that? Well, you'll have to listen to the interview to find out. First of all, whilst I was there, I spoke with Deborah Bullivant, who's led the project and made it come to fruition, and with Joanne Harris, who, of course, wrote Chocolat. And we'll hear from Deborah and Joanne now. Deborah, Joanne, hi. Thanks for joining me today. So, Deborah, first of all, what is Grimm & Co.?
Grimm & Co. is an apothecary to the magical. It's a place where magical beings can come to do their shopping, because just like us, they need to do their shopping. They have brooms to buy and potions to get, and we provide a quick service for them, for witches, so that they can get a ready-made potion rather than having to create their own. And then what not everybody knows about is that there's a secret door, and through the secret door, that's where the magic really happens, because that's where stories appear. Now,
So stories appear beyond the secret door. Sounds intriguing.
It is. Well, it starts with an imagination gym where you need to train your imagination to be able to develop those stories. So you start there, then you go up the story stairs, you climb those up to the story centre, and that's where you can create all sorts of word magic. So you might write lyrics to songs and create the album, or you might create an actual story in the story making workshops. And we have school workshops, and we also have free after school and weekend workshops for children to come in their own time and develop their own writing skills. So it's all about championing the writer in every child, really.
Superb. And I've come along to the launch, and what a joy it's been to see how everyone's having a fantastic time here today. One of the people having a fantastic time is Joanne Harris. Joanne, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. It's great to be here.
And you've been, you haven't been stumped by some difficult questions from the children, but they've been fascinated by the process of writing and asking you about books and your first ever book we've learned all about today.
Absolutely. Well, children are very tabula rasa when it comes to this sort of thing, and so they're full of all kinds of interesting questions that I haven't had elsewhere. You know, adults tend to ask you the reasonable questions about where you get your ideas from. Children will ask you, you know, what Simpsons character you would be if you had a choice, or what's your favourite spider? They are absolutely fizzing with enthusiasm and ideas, and all they need is a little bit of encouragement to write their own stories, which is exactly what they're getting here.
They certainly are. So what was it then that got you involved, that most excited you about the project here?
Well, I think I've been involved peripherally for some time, and I was asked to donate some ideas to the Devious Dictionary and various other things, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what's happening here. And I was drip-fed information about what Grimm & Co. would be without really being able to visualise what it was. And that was some time ago now. That was at least 18 months ago, and I've been watching it emerge with some curiosity, thinking, oh, this sounds great, but will it happen? It sounds almost impossible. And being here now is almost impossible. And yet it's wonderful, and it's here. And it's a most unique and marvellous showcase for things of the imagination and anything peripheral to magic.
And it's not just children who are loving this, is it? You're merrily tweeting out pictures today, which are being picked up by notable authors and people all over the world. Other notable authors too.
Absolutely, yes. I think it's somewhere that an adult would appreciate just as much, and I can just see my fellow authors trooping round here to buy various juices of inspiration and anti-critic vitriol and all sorts of other wonderful potions and bottles that are on sale. But it is... imagination, after all, isn't just for children. It should be for everybody. But this is an absolutely wonderful resource for children of all ages, and I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what it will do.
And I'm sure we all are. And Deborah, you've made this happen, and as Joanne said, it really is incredible that you've actually got it going and made it happen. It really is astounding, but that's come from the support of organisations like the Arts Council. You've had some businesses supporting you as well, and a lot of hard work from you and from volunteers. What were the biggest challenges you had to overcome to get this going?
Well, one of the biggest challenges was to find organisations who were happy to donate their time and their skills and their expertise. And because we didn't have a lot of funding, Arts Council, you're right, did support us, but only so far. So we needed to get the community really backing this venture. Now, there's nothing south of Newcastle or north of Birmingham that does anything like this. There isn't a story centre in Yorkshire like this. And we desperately wanted this to happen. We saw a fabulous TED Talk by Dave Eggers about it, and that inspired me. So then I went out with that inspiration and tried to inspire businesses to support us. One of those was Side by Side, and I really must give them a mention because they are at the heart of what we've created here. Their branding has really informed the whole way that the identity has taken shape. Jeremy Dyson has written a backstory all about Graham Grimm and how it all began in 1148. So he wrote the story, and getting him involved wasn't such a task. He just was thrilled and said, this is the charity I want to get involved in. This is all about stories. Why wouldn't I? And Side by Side were the same. They just said, wow, you've got two sets of customers. You've got the mortal kind and the immortal kind. Who wouldn't want that job? So they've helped us to create an amazing brand and identity in Yorkshire, which I haven't seen the likes of anywhere else, I think. And Dave Eggers did actually say to me when I met him that he looked at the images and he said, you know, quite possibly this could be the best in the world. And I said, there's no possible about it. It most definitely will be.
So you've heard it here first, folks. This is going to be the best in the world. Deborah, Joanne, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. That was an interview with Deborah Bullivant of Grimm & Co. at the launch on Monday, and with Joanne Harris, author, who was one of many guests at the event. And very exciting it was too. Really exciting for the school children from St Bede's who got the chance to ask authors about their inspiration, the process of writing, and all sorts of other exciting questions. So we heard from Joanne about how the first book that she ever wrote was actually about cannibals and flesh-eating monsters when she was about 7 years old. We also heard at the event from Ian McMillan, and I asked Ian McMillan why he was there, what he was so excited about. We'll play the interview with Ian now. Okay, Ian, thanks for joining me today here at the launch. Fantastic event. Have you enjoyed yourself?
It is really amazing, this place, because before I came, I kind of had an idea what it might be. But now, having seen the building and having seen the commitment of the people who are involved in it, I realise that actually the story of it, the story of what this can do for a place like Rotherham that needs stories telling about it and needs to be able to invent its own story and retell its own story through young people, through older people, through this network of volunteers. I think it's both a very exciting and also a very moving thing to just come here and see this thing that still a bit, to be honest with you, from the outside looks like a pub, and then get in it and see this kind of maelstrom of activity. It's fantastic, it really is.
And it's been incredible to see how everyone's just having a brilliant time today as well. Kids, adults, authors, volunteers, everyone.
That's the thing, because sometimes, with the best will in the world, you go along to these events and they're not as exciting as you hope they will be, but this one has been. And it's partly to do with the astonishing conversion of the old pub into this magical setting, this Aladdin's cave of narrative. And it feels to me like it's not simply a novelty idea. I was a bit nervous that it might be a novelty that didn't have actual intellectual legs, but it feels to me that it has. It feels to me that this is a place that can help Rotherham to reinvent itself. Wouldn't it be great if people came from all over the place to this, to Grimm & Company in Rotherham, and Rotherham became known as a place? It always has been a place where there's been lots of arts and lots of culture and lots of writing, but if it became even more known because of this place. So, yes, it's... And to see people having fun, and in these terrible times when children tested to death at school, to see children using their imagination in an excitable and exciting way is absolutely flabbergasting.
So what you're saying as well, it's fun, it's imaginative, but it's grounded as well with some really good stuff happening here. It's, you know, there's loads going on.
I think it's got real intellectual heft to it, the idea that you can't actually live in a place unless you can start to build stories from it. You can't actually be a young person in a town without using your imagination to think about that town. What we want in towns like Sheffield and Barnsley and Rotherham and Doncaster is that the clever ones stay, that the clever ones realise that these places can be places where they can grow up and they can have a job and they can be valued artistically. And that's why this place is exciting, because it says that you, as young people, can be part of the narrative of this town, and that narrative and excitement and storytelling are a big part of it. So, yeah, it is... There's real thought behind this, and real thought behind the glee and the joy.
So this is about writing the story that we want to make happen here in Rotherham and turning it into reality.
It is, that's what it is, because as we know, Rotherham has some bad stories told about it. Rotherham, like a lot of the towns in South Yorkshire, has had a good kicking over the last 40 years. And we do feel far here from the northern powerhouse. But I think places like this can make towns like Rotherham synonymous with the idea that, all right, we can think of imaginative solutions to the problems that are facing us. And Grimm & Company is definitely that kind of imaginative solution.
Fantastic. Well, Ian, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. I'll go and get a cup of tea.
We're open for Business Live.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live. That was Ian McMillan talking with me on Monday at the launch of Grim & Co. before a well-earned cup of tea. Now, alongside Ian and Joanne Harris and, of course, Deborah Bullivant, who you've already heard from at Grim & Co., I talked with Ben Payne of the Ministry of Stories. The Ministry of Stories set up in Hoxton in London a few years ago, and they've been providing some support to Grim & Co. And talking about challenges they overcame and how they've been able to help Grim & Co. So we're going to hear from Ben Payne of the Ministry of Stories now. So, Ben, thanks for joining me today. Mm-hmm. And what a lovely opening we've had here in Rotherham, Grim & Co. But part of a family of exciting, imaginative experiences that you know very well and are involved in. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about Ministry of Stories.
Well, Ministry of Stories is a writing centre and a mentoring centre for young people aged 8 to 18. And we're based in East London, so we work with children and young people in Hackney, Tower in Islington. We celebrated our fifth birthday back in November, and we've been working to support and mentor Deborah and Grim & Co. for about 2.5 years, I think, now. So it's an amazing day today to actually see it all come together and come to fruition, and to see the children just being totally inspired by the place, and all the adults too. You know, it's an amazing shop with these extraordinary products and a brilliant writer centre, which is just going to be a home for their creativity and their writing for hopefully a very long time.
Absolutely. And so you've been able to draw on your experience, having been running for 5 years, to help Deborah overcome what may have been challenges that you've had to overcome.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest thing that you know now that you wish you'd known when you started 5 years ago?
I think the main thing that we talked to Deborah about was that Lucy and I, who are the kind of co-founders and co-directors, we realised that doing something like this takes a huge amount of support and commitment from lots and lots of other people, not just us. So we just got very good at asking people and saying, this is a great idea that we need and want to make happen, but we need your help. And actually, when you ask people and say, this is what we're trying to do, it's really quite amazing and quite humbling how people will just step up and get involved to make something like this happen. And this is how it works. And this is how it will carry on, is that people volunteering their time, doing bits of often very tiny things or huge things, like the people who've designed this place have done it all for free. And it's that kind of desire to make something like this happen and to pull it off, which is our best piece of advice, is asking people and they will respond.
Super. Well, thank you for those tips, those wise words. And of course, it's something that charities and social enterprises and small businesses even starting out who are listening to this programme can take heed of. Ask for advice. And those bigger businesses listening to this programme, when someone comes and asks for help, give it. It gives you a lovely warm feeling, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's what these things don't happen with just one people. I mean, one of these things about The Apprentice, which is a very entertaining programme, is the idea that people do this entirely on their own back, and it's all about their own talent and their commitment and hard work. And it is, but actually to make something like this happen involves a huge number of people.
Absolutely. So harness the power of the crowd, get help.
Yes.
Lovely. Well, Ben, thanks for joining me.
No problem.
We're open for Business Live.
That was Ben Payne of the Ministry of Stories talking with me on Monday at the launch in Rotherham of Grim & Co. And Grim & Co. was inspired by Dave Eggers' 2008 TED Talk about people engaging with local schools. And Deborah Bullivant heard the TED Talk, got inspired herself and thought, wouldn't it be fantastic to do something like this in Rotherham? And a whole mythology has now been created for Grim & Co., written by Jeremy Dyson, who's a non-acting member of the League of Gentlemen, and he's the co-writer of the West End play Ghost Stories. He's also a trustee of Grim & Co., so he was there at the launch on Monday, and I had a chat with Jeremy, asked him about his involvement. We'll hear from Jeremy now. Jeremy, thanks for joining me. What a fantastic day it's been at the Grim & Co launch.
It's been an unbelievably exciting day for us, for the trustees. I mean, obviously for the kids, but for us, it's because it's been, well, for me, it's been about 3 years, I think, that I've been involved. And this is the culmination of a day that we... Not that you never thought it would happen, but it just seemed so far off in the distance. And now it's been so beautifully realised in the shop that... It's just so exciting to walk in.
Yes, meticulous attention to detail as well.
Yeah, and I can remember the conversations we had about what it would be good for it to be like is exactly that. And you know, the team that's put it together, it's all voluntary. The designers, all the people who've come in and built that in itself is inspiring.
It is, isn't it? And then today to see the kids have such a brilliant time.
Yeah.
But not only the kids, all the adults in the room.
Well, you see the same expression on the adults' faces as on the kids' faces, which is a real treat. And another thing that, not that we talked about that, but is a sort of confirmation that something's been got right.
Yeah, true. And you weren't floored by any difficult questions from the kids, were you?
The kids' questions are brilliant because they don't mess around, and they've got no airs and graces in the best possible way, so they're just really direct and to the point, and they're really interesting questions to answer. You know, they're not trying to win your favour, they just want to know.
They do, they just have this yearning.
Yeah.
Right, that's what they want to know.
Yeah. You've
got to tell them.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's brilliant, and we had two lots of kids in and two grillings. In fact, the first one was much more intimidating because they got us up one by one. Because they were asked to decide how they wanted to do it, and they decided they wanted to get the writers up one by one to speak to them. So you had to sit with this... That's like a KGB interrogation.
Yeah.
A semicircle of children gazing at you with their pre-prepared questions.
But they loved it, didn't they? They loved it. And I think they love your story as well.
Well, that's another treat for me personally, because I one of the things that Deborah encouraged me to do was to come up with a founding story for Grim & Co. So we sort of, we worked on a mythology together, and then I wrote this story, and I did not know what they were going to do with it when Deborah brought me in about a month ago, and the story is painted on was to come up with a founding story for Grim & Co. So we worked on a mythology to get anything I've written, where you walk into a room and it's graffitied onto the wall, the whole story, and it's not a short story either by any means.
Indeed.
So I can't think how long it must have taken for that to be hand painted up on the wall.
And it looks stunning, though. You go through those doors and into that room, there it is.
Yeah, and it's the fact that they're through a pair of secret doors as well. When I was a kid, I was fascinated by the idea of secret rooms and sliding doors, and so that's a bit of a dream come true, really. Yeah.
And as a kid growing up, did you always knew what you wanted to do? That, you know, this was what you wanted to do in terms of writing?
Well, weirdly, I didn't know I was a writer until quite a bit later, really, until after I went to art college for a year after I left school, and it was sort of around the end of that I began to get a glimmer that actually I was writing was where I wanted to be. I always knew I wanted to be in sort of the world of film and television, but I used to think it was more... The first thing I ever wanted to be was a special effects man. So, for Doctor Who.
Oh, yes, I think we've all been there.
Yeah, no, anything with space in it or spaceships or also Ray Harryhausen, the animated monsters, you know, that... That was an early passion of mine. So I thought that was my first thought, is that we'd end up doing something like that. It didn't occur to me I'd end up writing the stuff. So, yes, but often that's not uncommon for people such as me, I think, to take windy paths.
And any advice for people who are listening to this show and they think, well, actually, what I want to do is write. I want to write.
Well, first thing, if you're locally based, get down to Grim & Co.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
You will find unlimited inspiration here. But secondly, if you've got a passion for it or a feeling for it or something that you want to do, very simple advice: do it, and don't give up. It's the tenacity that is that's the key to it, as much as what you might call a talent. It's the decision to do it and stick to that. That seems to be the key to it, I think, in my experience.
Super lovely. So have that tenacity. Don't be knocked back, and get yourself down to Grimm & Co.
Definitely get yourself down to Grimm & Co, because honestly, there's nowhere else like it in the country. It's an extraordinary place, and it's right here on your doorstep in Rotherham. Yeah,
superb. Well, Jeremy, from an extraordinary place in Rotherham, thanks for joining me
today.
Thank you.
We're open for business live.
Jeremy Dyson there, talking with me on Monday at the launch of An Extraordinary Place in Rotherham, Grimm & Co. And honestly, get yourself down there. It's absolutely fantastic for kids, for adults, for anyone with an imagination. It's really worth a trip. Now, Grimm & Co has been supported by Arts Council England and Big Lottery and the Claw Duffield Foundation and also the Paul Hamlin Foundation. But it is now trading. You can go in, you can buy all sorts of wonderful things that supports its work. The project has also been created thanks to support from local businesses. Side by Side gifted £90,000 of their time to create branding, to create design and help with the background story. Tech Spray installed the twisted beanstalk slide that you'll find at Grimm & Co. An exhilarating reward to children after a writing session. And Wilmot Dixon installed a huge bookcase with a bit of a secret. What's the secret? Well, get yourself down to Grimm & Co. and you'll be able to find out more. So, we're going to take a quick break for a track of music. We're going to play some David J. Roach. It's his track, Hour of Need.
We're open for business live.
David J. Roach there and his track Hour of Need. Now, this is Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We're broadcasting on 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. We've heard a number of interviews earlier on today, recorded at the launch of Grimm & Co., a fantastic project in Rotherham, including Deborah Bullivant, who's founder and led the project, alongside Joanne Harris, author of Chocolat, Ian McMillan, poet, radio presenter, bard, Ben Payne of the Ministry of Stories, Jeremy Dyson, League of Gentlemen fame, who's written a fantastic story, The Mythology of Grimm & Co. So if you've just tuned in and you've missed those, don't panic. Catch them on the podcast later on sheffieldlive.org. Go to shows, find Business Live, and then you'll be able to find today's show from Friday the 4th of March. Now, what does it take to make an independent business, an independent retail business successful? Well, a few weeks ago, I caught up with Laura Bullock of Seven Hills Bakery on Shalvale Road. And we'll play the interview with Laura now. Laura, good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining me today. And it's great to be here in the cafe at Seven Hills. And what a year you've had over the last year, in fact. 2015 was a big year for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for wanting to speak to me as well. It was a very big year. We moved premises in December 2014. It was the first full year with the integrated space where now our bakery and greengrocers cafe and shop are all in one space. So yeah,
you moved in 2014, yeah. Having been established further down Shalvale Road. Mm-hmm. Much bigger premises and taking on that you've moved into much bigger premises and taking on a whole new range of products in terms of greengrocers.
Yeah. I mean, it is a big space, but because we previously had a bakery in the centre of town that was in a light industrial estate near Devonshire Green.
Yes.
I think obviously lots of people didn't ever see that, and so we were used to having a bit more room. But yes, having it all in one space is very different. And we took over Sharon Marrow when Nikki decided to sell that.
Yes.
And so, yeah, it just seemed, it's such an established business on Sharonvale Road that it seemed silly not to try and keep it on. And it's fun, you know, the way that we work, we make everything by hand. We were already buying things from some of the suppliers, some fruits and vegetables and things to use in our products anyway.
So you had relationships with the suppliers at Nikki from Sharon Marrow?
Yes, some, that's for sure. Solid, I mean, we've learned, we've made more. But yes, sure, we use Sheffield Organic Growers already, Hugh at Hazelhurst Farm already. I had relationships relationship, new bit with Sheffield Honey and also Pumpkin Oil. So there were a few that were on Lembas,
yes.
The dry things. We buy lots of things from them. So it was kind of easier maybe than it might have been if we were coming to something completely cold.
Indeed. And you'd established quite a big following in terms of customers.
Yeah,
with the shop before. And yeah. I mean, I can remember enjoying your products. Many people will have done from that smaller shop. But as you say, you've now been able to bring the whole thing together.
Yeah, and I think people like Charivale have a lot of loyal customers that do their shop up and down the road. You can buy, you can do a complete shop here,
yes,
if you so want. And so I think that we had a lot of customers that already went to Sharamaro, but then obviously we had some that didn't, wouldn't have come to us, and vice versa. So yeah, it was a bit, it was a bit of a challenge. We knew that moving down the road, even though it was only down the road, would be a challenge to make people aware that we were there. And remember, we still do get people coming in being like, I thought you'd shut down, I've now found you. We didn't actually go anywhere, we just moved down
just
the road.
Moved,
so yeah.
Yeah,
it was quite hard to communicate that, because I think people, yeah, I think lots of people, you know where you're going, or you think you know where you're going, and you don't even necessarily, look around.
Quite.
Especially if you're in the car, you just drive to a certain location, get out, do your shopping, get back in. And so it took a while to build back up.
Yeah.
It's great. We have a lot of people, as I say, very, very loyal, but there are lots of us on the road.
Wonderful. And as you say, then people are coming here and using other shops on Charivale Road.
Absolutely.
Whether that's a specific trip down to Charivale Road or people in homes and businesses all around you anyway.
Yeah.
And you work and collaborate with other businesses here
we
on
do.
The road too.
Yeah, it's lovely. Like, we all get to know each other, and yeah, we do some evening events with the guys at Starmore Boss, the
yes.
wine merchants, and also with Nicky Nicky at Porterbrook Deli. So we do monthly cheese, bread, wine evenings, tastings, and we buy products from both of them, especially to use as well. But we also use the hardware shop and the other butchers, and John T buys some bread from us. And so, yeah, and Christian comes in from the fishmonger. So, yeah, like we're...
It's a lovely community.
Bunch. Yeah, I think we just really appreciate that we're all independents. We're all trying really hard to do the same thing, really, to keep this kind of vibe going. And people, customers really always really appreciate it when you work together as well, to see it's not, competition can be a really good thing.
Indeed, but customers appreciate the collaboration as well, and the fact that there are complementary businesses and some overlap between the businesses, but actually all working together, it's brilliant, and makes it a destination as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, especially us guys, like, I don't know, we talk quite a lot about fermentation on our evenings, because it is amazing that even though, you drink something, you eat, and you eat other things, that actually the process of how they're made can be fairly similar, and so you can get a bit geeky about how things are made, which is quite nice.
Fantastic. I can imagine getting really geeky about sourdough bread.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always nice to be asked questions. I guess that's the thing about, we're always there when we do these events, so,
yes.
Not only is it nice to eat everything and eat some things that you might not have, or taste some things that you might not have had before, but people can ask us questions as well, because, Barry and Jeff are really super knowledgeable about their area.
Yes.
Nick and Nikki know a lot and have met a lot of producers of the cheeses they sell. And then obviously it's me that I'm actually here and I can show people things or talk about things. So, yeah, I think that's definitely a pull.
Indeed.
I hope it is, anyway.
Well, I think Barry is going to be on this programme in a few weeks' time.
Oh, that's great. And we met up last night, and I was saying that you were coming in today.
Excellent.
And actually, I think he was like, oh, yeah, I need to book him in. So
yes,
that'll be really nice.
Oh, good stuff. Brilliant. Yeah. And so in terms of how you got to where you are, open the shop further down the road, first of all. Now, there must be something, there is something absolutely wonderfully tactile about getting your hands in and kneading and making bread. I mean, that's going to resonate with so many of our listeners. It certainly resonates with me and my family. I know how great it is to make your own bread. And I can see the attraction in making good quality bread that's not full of horrible ingredients, not full of
far too much sugar and so much processed bread is as well.
Yeah.
And making just really nice bread. Now, was the original shop born out of a passion for baking, a passion for bread, or how did it come to be?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely from a passion for making food by hand in general, I would say, to begin with, because it's myself and my business partner, Martina, and there was a third partner at first, but he left after about a year. But we all met at the School of Artisan Food in Welbeck, near Nottinghamshire. Yes. And so we went there to do the diploma course. And we all went there. Most of the people there, it was their second career or they were retraining in another skill. Just really interested in making things by hand, in the provenance of food, in making sure that, you know, the ingredients are good. And I guess for us especially, in which we've strive very hard to keep up, is the consistency of the product. Because, you know, bread, I think that's the hardest challenge, day in, day out. And if any home bakers will know that just as well, to make things the same every time with a nice rise and a nice crust. And especially we try and make our breads look different and appealing as well. So we do a lot of hand moulding. We don't use very many tins. We just wanted and still want to produce the best things that we can possibly produce, and hopefully that means that it's an everyday product, which we think is really important. And obviously it's going to be more expensive than a mass produced factory product because we don't work in those type of volumes.
No, quite.
We try really hard to source nice ingredients, to make things that we like, and that sounds a bit maybe a bit selfish, but that's kind of where it comes out of. It's like, what do I want to eat?
Yes.
Is, I think, fundamental
to
successful food businesses.
It is, isn't it? And that gives you the idea that I want to eat this and I can't get it anywhere.
Yeah.
And so,
sure.
Yeah, I want to make this. And interesting how you met in terms of the School of Artisan Food, and there's really been a resurgence as well.
Absolutely.
Knowing where food's from and how it's made, food and drink as well.
Yeah,
And local Yorkshire and British produce and alongside independent shops as well, with new research actually that we have mentioned at the start of today's programme, talking about how independent shops are bucking the trend compared with chains.
Yeah.
So putting all this together into a business, it works really, really well. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So you and your business partners, you started up down the road.
Yeah.
It came, as you say, from the passion, the wanting to create the food yourself, to know where things have come from. You took the opportunity to move down to the premises where you are now. You've been here for just over a year and a bit. What's next, then?
What's next? There's always next. I think there's still a lot, things that we can iron out in here, for sure. I think we're going to work. I'm going to work with some of the guys that work in the shop and in the bakery. I think we can do better with the cafe food and refine it more and make some more like bespoke items in house. That, you know, we try very hard to. I don't really want to rush things. I think we've always gone on the slow growth model. See how things go. See what happens. And so I think, you know, we're established here now. We're busy. People know we're here. But I think I'd like to start doing breakfasts and more full cooked food like that. And also the evenings. I have a license to open in the evenings. So we've started doing these collaborative events that I spoke about. But also maybe to get in some other people and do some pop-up nights, bistro nights. We're certainly going to be working with Barry and Jeff. We can use the space for tastings because we can fit quite a lot of people in. And so I'm trying to get a premises license. And we're south-facing, so I should really be putting something outside.
Yes.
But, you know, like anything, we don't have big backers behind us. We need to make some money, save some money.
Yes.
Try and spend it whenever we can. And I'm really proud as well that we're going to also start. I'm getting accredited to be a living wage employer.
Super.
So that means I'm also going to do that in line with the minimum wage second minimum wage increase that's going to come in April, I'm then going to step up to living wage. So really pleased about that as well, that I can afford to do that.
Fantastic, and that's a great position to be in. To be in the business, running the business, and be able to create great, to create jobs that pay.
I have an amazing team of staff, and try really hard to encourage people. I've had people that have worked with me. Right, the first people we ever employed still work for me. So try and encourage it as a career, and there is lots of different avenues to the jobs as well. Ben, who's a fruit and veg buyer, he's just training to be a baker because he really wanted to do that. So it's really fun that people can see, and that's another benefit of us being in one space, is that the staff also know that when you're saying, oh God, don't do that, the bakery can't handle, can't do it, they can actually see why it's an issue, why that's a problem, and they can work together to solve problems as well.
Indeed,
which makes everybody feel better.
Excellent. It's a team then.
Yeah, exactly. And you get to see, literally, when you ask somebody a question here, if they can't answer it themselves directly, they should be able to go into another section and say, how is that done?
Yes.
What is that? How is it made? And they should be able to find the information out from someone that's doing it. So I think that's also really nice.
Fantastic, superb. Well, you've talked about challenges in the business. Is there anything you know now that you wish you'd known when you started?
I think staff, taking on employees, it's astounding how much time it can take up.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that, and speaking to other business owners as well, that I don't think you anticipate or appreciate. And that could be, one to now I employ 14 people.
Yeah.
And as I said, amazing. It's not the staff themselves, of course, that's
no,
the problem.
It's the time.
It's the time, the admin, the dealing with, holiday pay. There's a whole swathe of things that I think go hand in hand with that. That's no different if you're a small business to if you're a multi-million pound business.
The
rules and regulations have to do are exactly the same.
But the multi-million pound business may have an HR department, whereas you are the HR department as well.
I think that's a huge learning curve for yourself as well to learn to deal with people and delegate and be comfortable that you can't do everything yourself.
Indeed.
Like, I mean, it's impossible.
And is there anywhere
you have to let go?
Yes.
Maybe.
You do. Is there anywhere that's been very helpful to you in terms of getting advice or expertise or support?
To be honest, I don't take for granted that I do get on with people that own businesses that are so similar in many ways to me. I for a couple of years, went to an informal networking group called the Lean In Network, and that I met lots of similar, like-minded people. I think our businesses were very diverse, and it's always amazing when you meet other people that are from a completely different sector to you. You all have the same issues, whether it be customer service, staff, supplies, as much as they might be completely
different businesses, different sectors,
totally different
things, the issues that you have to grapple with.
Yeah, and so sometimes it's just nice to hear that other people have those issues, and that it's not just you tearing your hair out, going crazy. So
learn from other people running businesses,
so.
Perhaps similar size, even if they're totally different sectors.
Yeah, I think it's because it's really hard actually to find, to find people that are going through the same growth as you. Maybe you might be like, oh, can I go visit somebody that will do the same thing? But even if they have been through a similar process, it'll still be totally different to yours.
Quite.
And the way that they deal with it might be totally different to yours, so I think it's worth trying to just talk to a few. And I mean, most people are quite open and honest about what they're doing and don't mind you asking questions. And I think I'm not precious about the business. It's nothing secretive.
Well, a common thread that runs through this program is that people who we interview who are running businesses that are successful, and by successful I mean the business is where they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
people often talk about the benefits of simply asking for advice.
Absolutely.
Getting soundings from other people.
Yeah, and not being threatened necessarily, that whole thing about competition, and it can, you know, it can be really difficult, like, really difficult. You've all got overheads, you've all got, you know, everyone's got costs,
yes.
You've got your business rates, you've got all these things. But sometimes, you know, as long as I think I'm really sure about what I'm trying to provide people and to sell to people, and I try and make, you know, everyone, all the staff have the same mentality, and they do, otherwise it wouldn't work.
No.
You know, they have to be invested in what you're trying to do, and so people notice that, and I think they appreciate that, and it makes it much easier. And somebody else could be doing something similar close to you, but they're not you, and they're not you, they're not trying, they'll never do exactly the
Indeed.
Same thing, because
yeah.
You know, two people doing the same, making the same bread, won't do the same thing. One person will like one and one person will like another, and you just have to try and be sure enough about the one that you're trying to make, and hope that people will buy it. So yeah,
well, there's a lesson there. It applies to all sorts of independent businesses as well. Whether people listening are running a shop or a cafe, or whether they're running, say, a graphic design business, and there are hundreds of graphic design businesses. But
what you
do, and your customers are buying your expertise, and they're also invested in that relationship with you and the way you personally do things as well. So I think it's really interesting how that applies, and how it applies to independence.
Yeah, I think so. Like, you know, lots of people know people's names and they'll know other, you know, staff's names, because they might see them once, twice a week at least. And so, you know, you're gonna recognise people and their children and everything. So you might not, you know, you don't know them necessarily in lots of capacities, but you certainly know them in your little world and what they want from you.
Yes.
But yeah, I think it can be really hard. But
well, sounds as though the business has gone from strength to strength since moving down the road, taking on the old Sharrow Marrow and expanding, but still staying true to baking fantastic individual bread as well. And what a year it's been, clearly, for you. And great plans ahead for 2016.
Yeah.
And I can recommend to listeners, pop in for an absolutely delicious cup of coffee, if you like coffee, or cakes, or food, in the cafe, and come and buy some tasty food. Laura, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today, and all the best. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you very much.
We're open for business life.
You've been listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live with me, Jamie Veitch. We've been broadcasting on 93.2 FM, and we're also broadcasting on the internet at sheffieldlive.org. In the studio with me today has been Paul Gregory as sound engineer, so my thanks to him, and my thanks to you for listening. That last interview was one recorded a few weeks ago with Laura Bullock of Seven Hills Bakery. We've also heard today a number of interviews recorded at the launch of Grimm & Co. in Rotherham this week on Monday, where I met with Deborah Bullivant, who's founded and led the project. What a fantastic project it is. Get down there. We also heard from author Joanne Harris, from Ian McMillan, poet, bard, radio presenter, from Ben Payne of the Ministry of Stories, and from Jeremy Dyson, who's a member of the League of Gentlemen, all from the Grimm & Co. launch. That was fantastic. We'll be back on air next Friday, 9 a.m. till 10 a.m. So tune in then, but don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fabulous folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 all the way through to noon. So stay tuned for that. We'll play out with a little bit of David Bowie, Let's Dance.